This is Morning with Meaning with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Broder. If you've been following this series from the beginning, you'll know that we've been learning inspirational messages from the Kenos of Tisha B'Av. Today, we'll be discussing the last few Kenos. We'll start with Kenah 36, which begins with the words, Tzion Halo Tishali. This is the first of eight Kenos known as the Tzion Kenos, each starting with the word Tzion. These kenos express the uniqueness and majesty of the land of Israel. This first kenah of the group was written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi while he was traveling from Spain to Eretz Yisrael. In this kenah, he conveys his deep love for the land of Israel. Here, and more fully in his work, the Kuzari, he describes how special Eretz Yisrael is, both spiritually and physically. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes that the land of Israel is Makom Asher Ruach Elokim Shefucha Al Bechirayach, the place where Hashem revealed himself to various Nevi'im. According to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, every location where Hashem spoke to a Navi absorbed some of his Shechina and is therefore forever infused with his holiness. This is a quality that only Eretz Yisrael possesses. He notes that the stones and the soil of Eretz Yisrael have been enriched because our ancestors are buried there. Even the air in Eretz Yisrael is superior to every other place, and it benefits not only the body, but the soul as well. It's clear from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's words that he cherished the land of Israel. The passion and love for Eretz Yisrael is exactly what Bnei Yisrael were lacking in the desert. When they heard the Meraglim's negative words about the land, they cried that they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael rejected Hashem's gift, and in doing so, they spurned Hashem. This sin was one of the reasons that Tisha B'Av was established as a day of mourning. So what can we do as a tikkun for this terrible sin? How can we be sure not to repeat the same offensive behavior as those Jews in the desert? We need to show that we appreciate how precious Eretz Yisrael is. We can't take for granted that we have the state of Israel, with full access to Yerushalayim. Not so long ago, this wasn't the case. Part of showing our love for Eretz Yisrael is to never speak Lashon Hara about the land, like the Meraglim did. According to Mishpatei HaShalom, this means not speaking critically about any aspect of Hashem's treasured land, including the weather in Israel, the fruit that grows there, or the people living there. Basically, it's anything that might cause people to think negatively about the land. In Mishpatei HaShalom, we are told, Lashon hara al Eretz Yisrael nechshav Lashon hara al HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lashon hara against Eretz Yisrael is considered Lashon hara against Hashem. The reason is that Hashem considers this land to be his prized possession. So one who criticizes it is disparaging Hashem. Being careful about how we speak about Eretz Yisrael is one relatively easy thing that we can commit to this Tisha B'Av. In the midst of the Tzion Kenos is Kenah 41, which was written to commemorate the tragic events that happened in Paris in the year 1242. A man who had renounced his Judaism and converted to Christianity attacked the Talmud as being anti the Catholic Church. He brought his accusations to the king, Louis IX, who was more than eager to listen to these charges. The king had wanted the Jews to abandon their faith, and now this apostate was telling him how to make it happen. Since halacha was the foundation of Jewish life, he realized that if there was no more Talmud, there'd be no more Judaism. For the appearance of fairness, the king ordered that the Talmud be put on trial. Jewish and Christian theologians would each defend their positions in a disputation. Of course, this trial was a sham, with the foregone conclusion that the Talmud was offensive to Christianity. Sure enough, the Talmud was found guilty and condemned to be burned. In response to the verdict, officials throughout France seized every copy of the Talmud and its commentaries, along with other Jewish books. This amounted to over 10,000 volumes of Hebrew manuscripts, all of which had been painstakingly handwritten. Many works were the sole copies that existed. These sfarim were loaded onto 24 wagons and brought outside the church, and then dumped in a pile on the ground. And then, in front of a large audience, King Louis IX set the books on fire. Anyone trying to prevent this was immediately killed. The Maharam of Rottenburg, the author of Kenah 41, tries to make sense of this unfathomable incident and asks, Echa nituna be'esh ochla te'uchal be'esh basar. How can it be that the Torah, which was given through a heavenly fire at Har Sinai, is now being destroyed through a fire kindled by man? He wants to know how this terrible thing could have happened. An answer to this question is advanced by another eyewitness to this tragic event, a man named Hillel ben Shmuel. He recounted that prior to the Talmud burning incident, there were some Torah scholars who vehemently opposed the teachings of the Rambam, especially in his work Mora Nevuchim. These sages banned the studying of any of the Rambam's works. Three French rabbis from this anti-Rambam group went so far as to inform the church that the Rambam had written about ideas that were hostile to Catholicism. Not surprisingly, the church's response was to burn the Rambam's books. Hillel ben Shmuel declared that it wasn't a coincidence that the burning of the Talmud happened just 1 month later in the exact same location. He noted poetically that the ashes of the Rambam's books and those of the Talmud mingled together, showing that one event led to another. This sad episode is yet another case of Sinas Chinam. They disagreed with someone's viewpoint to such an extent as to cause incredible destruction and a desecration of Hashem's name. Our Sinas Chinam may not be as extreme, but it is also hurtful and damaging. People have varied religious practices, political views, and ideologies. They come from different backgrounds, affiliations, and persuasions. This doesn't mean that there needs to be strife between us. We don't need to denigrate or vilify those who think differently. On the contrary, being exposed to other opinions allows us to grow, to experience another perspective, and to expand our horizons. I'll move on to two kinos that are inserted before the final kinah, number 45. Those two supplemental kinos relate to the Holocaust. We commemorate the Holocaust on Tisha B'Av because, as we mentioned when discussing the kinos for the First Crusade, Tisha B'Av was designated as the day to remember all tragedies that befell the Jewish people. It is also worth pointing out that it was on Tisha B'Av, July 23, 1942, when the first trainload of Jews arrived at Treblinka, where they would be sent to the gas chambers. This occurrence makes the recitation of the Holocaust kinos particularly appropriate. I should mention that not everyone accepts the incorporation of kinos for the Holocaust in the Tisha B'Av service. Some argue that our religious leaders don't have the authority to compose contemporary kinos to add to our liturgy. Others claim that the intense devastation and suffering was of such a magnitude that it is impossible to fully capture it in a kina. Notwithstanding these objections and understanding the limitations, many do say these kinos on Tisha B'Av. They describe some of the horrors and the misery that the Jews suffered during the Holocaust, and they implore us to always remember the atrocities that were perpetrated by the Nazis. It's heart-wrenching to read about the agony and torture that the victims went through, but as these kinos repeatedly insist, we must speak about it in order to never forget what happened. After all, these kedoshim deserve to be remembered. The same is true for those who were butchered in the horrific attack on October 7th, as well as the soldiers who died fighting to destroy Hamas and rescue the hostages. Tisha B'Av is the day to remember their sacrifice. I want to read to you a letter that was written by an IDF soldier, Elkanah Wiesel, who was killed in battle. Elkanah had prepared this letter ahead of time to be read in the event of his being killed in action. He wrote, "If you are reading these words, something probably happened to me. First of all, in case I was captured by Hamas, I demand that no deal be made to release any terrorists in order to release me. Our overwhelming victory is more important than anything, so please, just press ahead with all the force until our victory is as overwhelming as possible." The letter continues, "Maybe I fell in battle. When a soldier falls in battle, it's sad, but I ask you to be happy. Don't be sad when you part from me. Sing a lot, hold each other's hands, and strengthen one another. We have so much to be excited and happy about. We are the generation of Jewish redemption. We are writing the most meaningful moments in the history of our people and the whole world. So please, be optimistic. Keep choosing life all the time, a life of love, hope, purity, and optimism." Elkanah's words show his incredible bravery and heroism, his sense of duty and honor, and his feeling of Jewish pride and dignity. The ultimate sacrifice that he and the other IDF soldiers made should never be forgotten. The final kinnah of Tisha B'Av, number 45, begins with the words Elit Zion. This kinnah provides a litany of what we lost as a result of the destruction, mostly referring to our spiritual deprivations. Although Hashem's presence fills the entire world, there are places where His Shechina is felt more directly, more intensely. The Beis HaMikdash was one of those places where Hashem's presence was palpable, similar to when Hashem revealed Himself at Matan Torah. Like Har Sinai, the Beis HaMikdash was a place that enabled us to glimpse into the spiritual world. The Korban ended all of that. The theme of the Elit Zion Kinnah is that no matter how much we weep over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it will never be sufficient. It compares our cries of mourning to the screams of a woman in childbirth and a bride who is bereaved of her husband. Both of those people can't control their tears. So too, if we could really grasp all that's gone, we would never cease crying over the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, losing the Beis HaMikdash is one of the main things of the kinnos. But as we've seen over the past 9 days, the kinnos include other ideas that are meant to inspire us to improve and to grow. One of the other central themes is to do tshuva. Chazal tell us that any generation in which the Beis HaMikdash isn't rebuilt is considered culpable for its destruction. Therefore, Tisha B'Av isn't just about remembering the horrible events that happened in the past. Instead, it's a time to reflect on what we're doing wrong to prevent the rebuilding of the third Beis HaMikdash. And then we need to commit to do better. While our mourning and sadness may end on Tisha B'Av, the real work starts on the 10th of Av, when we put the messages that we've learned from the kinnos into practice. For example, we spoke about having Avas Chinam by uplifting others, making them feel good and improving their lives. We talked about the importance of greeting people in order to make them feel seen and show them respect. One of the ideas that came up several times was the importance of having emunah in Hashem, knowing that He is in control and that He has a reason for everything that happens, even if we don't understand it. We learned about Rachel Imenu's sensitivity and her willingness to look at things from Leah's perspective. We too can be compassionate and understanding of others and empathize with their situation. We spoke about having shalom bayis when there is harmony between the husband and wife, how we can love the things that we share in common, but also respect the areas where we differ. And we discussed respecting other people's viewpoints and opinions and not belittling or condemning those who think differently. If each of us commits to put these lessons into practice, we will increase our achdus, our sense of unity with one another. This is the antidote to the sinas chinam that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and will bring us closer to the ultimate ge'ula, b'mheira v'yameinu. Thank you for listening to Morning with Meaning with the OU Women's Initiative. This shiur is dedicated le'iloi nishmos Paraleia bas Shlomo David and Shaul ben Baruch. Rabbi Peggy Weiss was nifteret on Ches Tishrei, 2014. Rabbi Saul Weiss was nifter Dalet Siv on 2019. In the merit of our learning, my parents' neshama should have an aliyah.